Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Daily Friend podcast. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm joined today with my colleagues, Herman Pretorius.
Good day, Nick.
And Mr. Gabriel Krauser.
How's it?
Right, so let's first tell you a little bit about a campaign that the IRR is going to be launching this week. I think we're launching it today, which is to do with the banking sector and expropriation without compensation, EWC. Herman, take us through the campaign. What are we asking the banks?
Indeed. So, essentially, when you're engaged in trying to change policy or policy debate, you don't just focus on parliament or government. You know, everyone has a stake in this, and everyone that has a stake in this discussion need to nail their colours to the mast. And in this regard, the banks have a very, very important role to play. I mean, if you look more broadly, like one of the arguments that I've heard why Des van Rooyen was only a weekend special finance minister is corporate South Africa put its foot down and got results. So the long and short of it, of this thing, is that if people in corporate South Africa feel that something can be done and should be done, then results can come of that. And so, and that pressurizing these people into nailing their colors to the mast on something like EWC is very, very important. And what we're essentially going to do is ask them the question, would banks expect South Africans to pay off bonds on properties that have been expropriated without compensation by the state? So if your farm or your residential land has been expropriated by the government, will the bank, your bank, still expect you to pay off the bonds on that piece of property? We've heard yeses, we've heard noes, and these were in private. And I think it's time that South Africans get some straight talking from their banks on this issue.
I think that's a very good campaign, precisely because one of the worst things that could happen is if big business and big government basically sort of collude together to mess around poor people or, you know, just ordinary property-owning people.
Well, the other thing to watch out for is the zombie walk. There's this idea that hypocrisy is going to hold you through. So we, as big business, know Ramaphosa. He's one of us. He's been wearing a suit and tie forever. He's got shares just like us. He knows how it works. So when he says things like we want to expropriate the land without compensation, we know that he's just advertising a position that he doesn't really hold, and therefore it's never going to happen. Mm. One of the reasons that I like to come back to the Zimbabwe example is that most historians and political commentators on the transition in Zimbabwe agree that by the time the ZANU-PF veterans were invading farms and burning them down or watching farmers burn them down in anticipation of it and beating up and killing a lot of farm workers in order to get there because the farm workers didn't want to lose their jobs, Mugabe didn't really have much power to stop them. For sure, he could have done better. For sure, he could have said, please, can we get some help from the South Africans to manage this treasonous sort of erosion of property rights in Zimbabwe? But domestically, he didn't have the power to stop it. Domestically, he only really had the power to rubber stamp it. Mm. So you can have a situation where Ramaphosa continues to talk one way, and even if he in his heart of hearts doesn't think that EWC is a good idea, if he doesn't come out and stop it, then it's going to happen. Likewise, the banks can think that really it would be terrible for business, but if they're not prepared to say so, and they're not prepared to say what kinds of plans they're making to ameliorate the problems, how they're going to write off or warehouse the toxic debt that will emerge on their books. If you've got a farmer who owes 2.5 million rand on a farm and can't pay it back because he no longer has a farm, what do you do with that? Well, you warehouse it or you try and maybe you've already sold it off, collateralized it. How much of that debt our banks are already sitting on is a sort of open question. Probably a hell of a lot. But unless they make it clear what they're going to do about it and what kind of effect it's going to have on the supposition that it's never really going to happen, you just make it more likely that it will happen.
Mm. It was one of the MDC MPs, I think it was Eddie Cross, who's actually written a very good article just talking about how that snowball effect happened in Zimbabwe. I think it's probably on Politics Web, so if you're very interested, you should check that out. Mm-hmm.
And we don't have to look, across the border to see examples of this ostrich and sand approach or an unwillingness to nail colors to the mast and come out on one side of an issue or another. In the mining sector, there was this corporate idea that, oh, you know, we can work with them. We can influence the policy. It won't be so disastrous because we'll have a seat at the table and those kind of things. But that didn't end well for the mining sector.
The mining sector's had very little growth since the sort of mining charter
exactly.
became its force.
And if the banks or Financial South Africa think that either they have something to gain by sitting on the fence or they have something to gain by playing nice on a fundamentally poisonous policy like EWC, then South Africans deserve to know that either way. Yep. And especially if South Africans are the clients of these big, you know, people who will actually come to your house and say, this used to be your house, but it's still your debt. Sorry, if someone else might own it, but we're going to need your money. Yep.
Great. Well, we look forward to the bank's response. Hopefully,
indeed,
they will respond in the right way.
That's Africanacity.
Yeah, if I can say one more thing about that, it's just worthwhile thinking one more reason that big business might not want to nail their colors to the mast. And this is going to sound facetious, but it's a real thing, is that it'll make cocktail parties more difficult for those CEOs and board members to navigate.
True. It's much harder to hang out with top government officials if you're...
If you're vocally and openly against them.
Yes. Oh,
you might have to actually defend yourself.
Yeah. And
or not get invited. I mean...
And it's a weird cost to consider, but, you know, insofar as they get you know, everyone in South Africa seems to get bonuses even when you do rubbish. Personally, their finances are probably relatively secured. Probably most board members are very well hedged against a weakening South Africa. They've got dollar-denominated investments, and so every time we do worse, they actually end up doing better. Mm. So from a property perspective, the elite are protected against the worst outcomes in South Africa. From a power perspective, they've got so much money that they can buy their way out of, you know, eroding health and safety and schooling and stuff like that.
They can send their kids overseas. They can fly overseas to a hospital for special operations.
So there are only three social goods. There's property, there's power, and then there's prestige or esteem. There's how easy it is to navigate social life, how much people like you. And for super rich people, if you hang out with the bourgeoisie, the oligarchy, the aristocracy, that's what they care most about. Mm. Having a nice wedding and everyone comes to it, having a funeral that everyone celebrates you at. And being able to go to the soiree and have the minister of some important portfolio come up to you and say, hey, Jeff, what a fabulous guy you are. Let me put my arm over the shoulder and let's take a selfie together. And that's the cost that they would have to pay if they were to take one step forward in saving South Africa. And that's a cost that they ought to pay if they really are serious moral human beings.
And South Africans often ask people like the IRR, what can we do? What can we actually do to stop this? And this is one of those things.
Beat the cocktail party.
Demand answers from your bank or help the IR demand those answers. And you actually have some leverage here. You actually have the ability to get these corporations to say, where do they stand on your future?
Yeah, you are their customer and they owe you an answer. All right, so let's move on to the sort of interesting news of the weekend, which was that Mr. Herman Mashaba, he initiated this whole people's dialogue thing.
Interesting news.
Yeah, we'll get to the argument now.
Hold your horses there, Herman.
Hold your horses. So we've had this people's dialogue launched by Herman, Herman Mashaba. and Musi Maimane was also kind of joined it later on, where there was also an ANC MP, Kosi, I think is his surname, who joined it later. And now Herman has told the city press that it is going to result in the founding of a new political party by the end of June at the latest, he said, and that they will contest the 2021 municipal elections. As part of this, he talked about the ideology of the party coming from the people. He said that it would be formed by what ordinary people had submitted to the People's Dialogue. He also said that it would be very tough on any politicians who wanted to join it. He talked about how politicians are... He didn't want anyone who didn't want to serve their own... who didn't want to serve the interests of the country in his party. He wanted only people who were altruistic.
They'll have to be passed through the eye of a needle
yes,
to get into the party.
Eye of the needle to get into the party. So we've kind of had a little bit of a difference of opinion here. Basically, it's a kind of, it's almost, I would say, a little bit of an optimist versus a pessimist view of this. So Gabriel, you think that, just to summarize, you think that this party has some potential, that it might go somewhere, but it needs to make the right choices. And Herman, you think that it's probably dead from the start. So Gabriel, why don't you lay out the positive case and then let's hear what Herman says.
Okay, so the positive case starts out with Herman Mashaba's life story. He is a tenacious and resilient entrepreneur, but that's not where he really begins. As he tells it, he starts out in the bitter and dire conditions of apartheid. His grandfather shot by a farmer. He wants to join the resistance movement, but doesn't have the connections that he needs to really get in there. And so he starts making or finding a new way to lead a healthy and dignified and positive life that sort of puts the finger in the eye of white race nationalists. And what that entails, amongst other things, is setting up a good family and setting up a really good business that's quite successful. And from there, he moves into politics. And it seems like until he came into politics, there was so much lining up about Mashaba that I really, really like. He was a vocal critic of BEE. He was the chair of the Free Market Foundation, which I think is one of our...
sister organization.
Yeah, it's something that it's an organization that we respect a lot. We disagree
on some issues, but we
think they do really, really good work.
On the fundamental issues, yeah, for sure.
Okay. And and he is then, I don't know, put in this strange situation where he has to get along with the EFF. It kind of is an obligation that he has. He doesn't seem willing to let go of power, perhaps because of personal calculations, perhaps because of broader political calculations. In any event, he seems to preside over corrupt tender practices when this is brought to light by Amabungani, in terms in particular of one deal where a car rental company, in order to get a 1.2 billion rand contract, sends 500,000 rand into an EFF slush fund. He says, I don't know why you guys are saying this. I don't know what it has to do with me. I just simply don't understand what the point of this is. And I think you guys have an agenda against the EFF. He sort of starts taking that line, sounding more and more like a race nationalist. Certainly, he uses his position and power as the mayor of Johannesburg in small ways that I was privy to sort of rebut the growing race nationalism. So at the Johannesburg Art Gallery and the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra, he goes there in the latter case with Dikgang Moseneke, and he says, you know, at the art gallery, he says, I've been into art all my life. People don't know that about me, but the beauty thing didn't come from nowhere. And I think all these people who say that we need to decolonize art and that it's like, it's somehow a Eurocentric thing to paint with oils on canvas are crazy. They should look at Gerard Sokoto's work and so on. I thought that was a really positive message. I mean, it's quite niche, but it's positive. Dikgang Moseneke, the Johannesburg Philharmonic Orchestra, saying the beautiful thing about listening to classical music is you can close your eyes and not see the color of the players and just listen to this beautiful thing. And you open your eyes and you see that there's players from all sorts, and that's fabulous too. But he seemed to affirm that kind of message. But increasingly, he becomes more and more race nationalist. And then with Maimani's resignation, Mashaba comes out saying, you know, this is just a white conspiracy and no one would ever want Maimani to go unless they were a white supremacist. Not noticing the sort of demonstrable fact that the DA has slipped and that Maimani is basically defending people like Phumzile van Dam, who's slapping South Africans for looking at her wrong and so on. And so it does seem like he lost the plot a little bit. But here's why I think this can be a good thing. Maybe if he's his own boss, he can come back to his own convictions. That's the first thing. And if he comes out starkly against BEE, any politician in this country who comes out starkly against BEE is on side on one of the most important issues in this country. Ideologically, economically, in terms of education, in every important sense. Secondly, my reading on the EFF is that it's extremely vulnerable. It's got about 10% of the vote. It's got over 2 million votes. If you look at our polling data from the IRR, most EFF members are not on board with its program. When last year or the year before, Malema, the commander-in-chief, this sort of militant figure whose only great sort of moment, impressive moment in life is when he as a child was carrying guns and messages during the People's War, he keeps sort of yearning for that kind of warlike state to return. So he says things like expropriation without compensation is going to cause pain. Things are going to get worse. If you don't want more pain, then you must forget the land issue. That's his attitude, and that's the attitude of the elite of the EFF. But most EFF members do not feel like that. You ask them, if we gave up the land issue, but there were more jobs in this country and better education, would you prefer that? The vast majority of them say yes. I've been to quite a few EFF rallies. I've got a lot of friends in the EFF. I went to the biggest rally before the election last year in the Soweto Stadium. And half of them were like old ladies who did not look like they were having the easiest lives, who were mostly celebrating the sort of Christian sermons that were being delivered for the first couple of hours of the ceremony, and loved the promise of more food and higher social wage. So those voters are, I think, open to grabbing, because the EFF's, the allegations of corruption against it are not going away, they're just getting worse. Mashaba could steal those votes. I think there are a lot of black conservatives, small C conservatives, that would be very keen to vote for Mashaba. Also a lot of sort of white radicals who would rather vote for him than vote for the EFF or the DA or the ANC. So I think that if he gets 5% of the vote, if he gets a million people to stand up behind him, and he says with his million votes, here's what we stand for. No more BEE. No more patronizing black people and acting as if skin color is a proxy for privilege. And no more allowing crony capitalists to take advantage of this. We want real free venture capitalism where it's hard work, where it's innovation, and where it's tenacity that really get you ahead and not just your connections. Then I think that that would be really good. And I think that we would disagree on various fundamental issues. Like Mashaba's super anti-immigrants. Mashaba might very well, if he leads such a party, be super pro the death penalty. Mashaba, if he were to continue this, might sort of really take up the Constitutional Court for saying you're not allowed to spank your children and say, we want to be able to spank our children because, you know, you must use the rod to discipline the child. These are the kinds of positions that have huge favor amongst an important segment of the population, and he might tap into that, and we would disagree with him on that. We don't see eye to eye on the immigration question. We don't see eye to eye, I think, on the death penalty. But if he were to take up the cudgel, especially against BEE, then I think he'd find very valuable allies in the liberal section of South Africa, especially the IRR, and we would find very valuable find him to be a very valuable ally too. He started this all off by saying Helen Zille's a racist without any evidence to back it up, and maybe that's just where, you know, if maybe that's just the thing he has to say at the beginning, and well, he stops Helen, saying that thing yeah, later
Helen,
on.
Helen has said that he doesn't say that to her in private.
So, you know, this is so the best way that this could work out is the DA continues to grow, that by the time they set up this party in 2022 and especially 2024, they pull out half, if not more, of the EFF's votes. And instead of having this radical ultra-left communist project to undermine the country, we have a significant minority of votes going towards black conservatives who really want to protect property rights, to discipline criminals, and not get their way with the death penalty, because the Constitutional Court will protect us in that regard.
Okay. So, Herman, that was a pretty good spiel there. And I want to...
Thank you, Nicholas.
If
Herman Mashaba would like to hire me as his sort of media liaison...
As his chief strategist, never mind media liaison.
I really would. You know, I mean, I think it's so interesting that, unfortunately, we don't see eye to eye on everything, but if he were to offer me a job, I would consider it very seriously. I right now can't do that because I'm an independent journalist and I'm going to be critical where he goes wrong. I'm certainly not carrying a can for this guy. But it is, you know, I think someone, I could see someone like me or, you know, really doing very good work for that party.
I do also think that he's unlikely to send you a job application because he does seem to now have focused his criticism of the DA to be more about how the IRR is destroying everything. But let's not dwell on that. So, Herman, I want to ask you two main things from what Gabriel has said. The first one is, you know, this idea that Mashaba might drop BE. So the kind of Gabriel has laid out that it would be a very good idea for him to do so. And indeed, for most of Mashaba's life, he has rejected BEE, right? As when he was head of the Free Market Foundation.
And not just BEE, affirmative action. It's not like the particulars of this legislation. It's the very idea of drafting law based on race.
When he was running for the mayorship of the city of Johannesburg, he actually ran counter to DA policy by publicly saying, I'm personally against BEE, even though the party's for it. Now, he later changed his mind very publicly, and he said one of the reasons he was leaving the party was because of this. But... you know, if he goes back to the sort of Mashaba of old, do you think there's a possibility that that will happen, that he will reject race-based politics?
that's a big if. But if he goes back to the Mashaba of old, then yes, my problem isn't with the Mashaba of old. It's that the Mashaba of 2019 explicitly denied the existence of the Mashaba of old. Our colleague, Sihlin Gubese, Big Daddy Liberty, tweeted at him and said, you know, Mr. Mashaba, I miss the days when you were liberal, entrepreneurial, a free market capitalist, inspiring, and things like that. And Mashaba unambiguously replied, the Herman you miss never existed. So it's essentially asking, if everything goes right, will things go right? And yes, of course. I mean, that goes without saying. But if there's one thing that I think we can agree on, politics worldwide, looking at someone like Boris Johnson or Donald Trump or Helen Ziller or Jacob Rees-Mogg, people like authenticity. They may not like the person behind the authenticity, but people genuinely respect politicians where what you see is what you get, and you know where you stand with them. And I remember,
but I think most of Mashaba's supporters would say that he is that character.
And they might say that, but they're wrong. In Gabriel's own admission, in the best case scenario, Mashaba gets reverse schizophrenia rather than schizophrenia. He goes back to who he was. Then he ignores the violent way in which he distanced himself from his former self. And then he kind of merges the two former selves into a more palatable current self. And, I mean, Freud would have a field day with that. So
yeah, but it just sounds like normal politics to me.
Actually, it so sounds cynical, like Gabriel. Normal. It sounds like normal failed politics to me. We have seen this spiel about a listening tour and about a big personality with struggle credentials and the ability to make money launch a party called Ahang. And I mean, it's possible that I dreamt up that party, so insignificant it has been in the last 10 years. I mean, genuinely, we've seen the spiel before. You parties in South Africa established on personality alone, and then espousing some populist South Africanism undefined by the baggage and problems of policy and ideology don't do well. Mr. Mashaba had one thing going for him, and that was authenticity. And if Gabriel's hope is that Mr. Mashaba will build his political future on an authentic return to the Herman Mashaba of old, then how does he explain the most recent iteration of Mr. Mashaba and the problem with his absolute vacuity when it comes to any conviction?
So I think that the answer to that is quite simple, and you can sort of see it in the Daily Maverick, which is done some of the best work in the country to take out the Zupta Gupta kind of alliance with really hard-nosed investigation,
and
right now is doing some of the best work for the last couple of years, been doing some of the best stuff to take out, to kneecap the EFF. I mean, the EFF really has an enemy in the Daily Maverick. It's not a play thing. Mm. But the Daily Maverick before that had an editorial line that was very sympathetic to the EFF, and its chief writer wrote a hell of a lot of very sympathetic stuff about the EFF, despite the fact that its founding constitution was profoundly racist and obviously communist.
And that the allegations against the leadership, the corruption allegations against the leadership of the EFF, preceded the formation of the EFF.
Right.
Not the VBS stuff, but there was...
But Malema had been doing other stuff and riding around with his Gucci. And in fact, part of his disciplining at the ANC had been because of that. So I think that everyone quicker or slower has come to the position that the EFF is really toxic, right? 10 years ago, Malema was this firebrand darling of the media. He couldn't sneeze without someone writing a story about it. Right now, he's really out in the cold. There's no major media organization that you can say is outright sympathetic to the EFF.
In Afrikaans, we call that nice.
Well, nice, very good, very good. So the point Thank is what Herman much. Mashaba would have to do to reconcile old Mashaba with 2019 Mashaba is say, I was fooled by the EFF. Those guys took me for a ride. I put my faith in them, and it turns out that they're a bunch of lying, stealing looters, and that the way that they get away with their lying, stealing, and looting is by pointing the finger at race and being a distraction.
So we've seen him be freed sort of from the shackles of DA party for a while now, but he hasn't made any move in that direction. In fact, all he says really about the EFF is that I disagree with them. On some issues, respectfully, but they're actually kind of good people.
And this is very much what Maimani's approach was. Maimani was very sympathetic to Malema in Parliament. He was often sort of saying quite laudatory things about him. Ramaphosa takes the same line. Oh, you're such a wonderful freedom fighter. You know, you might have one or two ideas that are incorrect, but like at a deep human level, we're all on board. And that a lot of that has to do with soul politics, as Kwame Anthony Appiah sometimes refers to it, like this idea that there's a soul that has a color that binds all people of one race, and that the most important thing is to have solidarity amongst people who share the same color soul. Sort of an idea that actually goes all the way back to W.E.B. Du Bois, one of the first great African-American writers on sociology, anthropology, and politics. Anyway, so this kind of idea has seemed to play an important role, but what I'm saying is, in the positive scenario, and I'm not saying that this is even the most likely thing to happen, I'm just saying that there's something that people should keep their eyes open for. In the positive scenario, Mushaba breaks against the EFF, forgets the possibility of him eating into the DA's support in some big way because he can wag the finger and say, oh, they're a bunch of racists without any evidence, but instead go after the EFF vote by explicitly saying, people who've been voting for the EFF have been duped, just like I was duped, and I can show you in public what it looks like to change your mind about these guys and to realize that they are humiliating domestic workers, that they're humiliating mine workers, that they're humiliating people because they're literally stealing from them directly, and explicitly say that EWC will chase away money and explicitly say that that is going to bring more pain, and they're doing it for a metaphysical belief in the virtue of chasing white men, white scum, Umlungu, into the sea. And in pushing himself against that, I think he would reconcile the two sides of the coin that we're speaking to and do so in a way that would make him the most potent opponent to Malema since MP Lekota, who, as far as I can tell, is the only member of parliament who's really stood face-to-face with Malema and not blinked.
I must say, the problem is, looking at if we look at your case for Herman Mashaba, it essentially comes down to if he comes down on the right side of BEE.
100%.
He has had a few months to do that. He has not done that.
Yeah.
Secondly, where he comes out and says, here's what we stand for, and he begins this, let's call it populist small-c conservatism, he has actively said that's not what his party will be. It won't be an ideological body. And then lastly, that the EFF's vulnerability might be the opportunity for him to grow into that support base and essentially, you know, Trojan horse it. But the problem is then he must actually take in BEE and on land and property rights, the two most important policies to the EFF, and go directly against them.
Yeah, to the base. And I'm saying the base already doesn't believe it. Now, I do think, I want to say with Akgang came out very mealy-mouthed. That was one of its problems. And initially, COPE came out pretty mealy-mouthed on these race-based policies too.
And then later changed.
Yeah. And then later changed. And that was one of its problems. So I do think that the temptation, as we talked about earlier with your campaign against the banks, because people are so plugged into an elite network, also an information network run by the major sort of news platforms in the country and the soiree circuit, where it's very hard to be anti-BEE. It takes a long time for people to realize that if you really want to speak to common South Africans, being anti-BEE doesn't chase them away. It makes them say, okay, what have you got instead? And if you can come up with a good thing instead, and again, you could come to the IRR, we've got some really great ideas of what you can do instead of BEE, then I think that he would reach into the heartland and he would reach into the hearts and minds of a lot of South Africans.
But
I'm not saying that he's doing that. Right now, he's still stuck. This people's talk. I've seen photos of it. It looks miserable, and it very much looks like he's really still speaking to the same power brokers that are trapped in the fashionable sort of upper crust of this country, which is so removed from reality that it thinks that like a 3,000 rand minimum wage is progress, and it thinks that promising people that they're going to get land for nothing by chasing out the white scum is either a useful promise to make or actually a useful thing to deliver on. Like, he is stuck in that world, and if it takes him three years to get out of that world, then it's going to be too late. But if he does it too sweet, then I think he could build a real base going into 2022.
Now, the problem is, I think that you're essentially saying that if he moves towards the IRR, then on certain issues, not on all of them, then he'll be good. Since him leaving active politics before his, you know, hugely unexpected, sarcastic there, return to politics, as Nick has said earlier, he's sharpened his criticism on the DA and essentially is using the IRR as a vehicle for that criticism. So it seems to me, you know, you talk about being removed from reality. I don't think it is even vaguely possible that he might go the direction you want. We have seen no reason for him to do that. I agree with you. Were he to do that, there's an incredible opportunity for a new black party that will take, I think, the place that the IFP vacated in its slow, terminal illness. But we have no reason to think he's going to do that. In fact, we have substantial reasons.
Well, I've got on my side, I've got years and years of his speeches and lectures and his affiliation with the Free Market Foundation and such like,
which is
some reason. And hypocrisy. I started this podcast out by saying something about hypocrisy and it being a great weakness.
Are you now going to disagree with it?
No. It's true. It's true, but it's true within limits. And we might be at one of the limits. I think the Institute of Race Relations is doing extremely important work. I think we're in the fight of our lives.
It is. And what a time to be
alive.
And
we need all of the support that we can get right now. And Herman Mashaba calling us racists when he knows that we're not, when he on a personal level knows that we're not, is hugely destructive to that. So I'm not saying that I take his dishonesty lightly. He has been frankly villainous in public, in his public comments of late. But I'm trying to say there's a silver lining out there. If he can at least come to the party when it comes to policy, if he can at least say, well, I think those particular individuals over there are a bunch of rubbishes, but they are right about one thing. This country's being crushed by BEE. They're right about the fact that the procurement policies that Eskom has been forced to follow have meant that we've used hugely expensive coal, that we've used diesel when we shouldn't have been using diesel, that we've fired people that we shouldn't have fired, that we've hired people that we shouldn't have hired. If he can make those points, then perhaps there's some redemption to him to have after this cataclysmic eruption, after this completely shameful abandonment of his post as mayor of Johannesburg. I can't criticize strongly enough what he's done to this city in jumping ship when we really need him to be there for us, fighting against tenderpreneurs for us, fighting against kleptocracy for us. For him to run away then just because it sort of suits his ego is a shame. But he can redeem that shame, I think, to a point. If he can harness a million South Africans and give voice to the complaints of people who don't agree with non-racialism all out, but do agree that we need to change the way this country is going.
Gentlemen, I'm going to wrap it up now. I think I must admit that I am not an unbiased moderator. I do agree with Mr. Pretorius here. Having served in Mashaba's administration, I really think that he doesn't have a sort of strong ideological core and that he doesn't necessarily actually really grasp the core of the problem. I think that it remains to be seen what will come out of it. I agree with Gabriel that if he did do those things, he would have he'd be in a very good position and he would perhaps even be a transformative figure in our politics. I think some of the raw material is there. But I suspect, being one of the IRR's foremost pessimists, that the people's dialogue is more likely to produce the kind of things that the sort of political and activist class are always concerned about. There'll be a mixture of good and bad ideas. There'll be something about early childhood development. There'll be something about chasing away foreigners. There'll be something about no to drugs. There'll be something about small business development. Stuff that we've all seen already. There'll be one or two ones that are probably worth fighting for, but there'll also be a lot that are really just counterproductive. But it remains to be seen. Hopefully I'm wrong. And if I am wrong, I will... Well,
Yeah, you'll buy me a drink.
I will buy Gabriel a drink. I think we're going to have to wrap it up there. We have a pretty interesting topic for next time that Gabriel wanted to get to, but we don't have time. So thank you very much for listening. Please support our banking campaign in the media and by asking your on social media rather, and by asking your bank what the consequences of EWC will be for your bond. And then also, if you like the work that the Institute of Race Relations does, please consider becoming a friend of the Institute. You can SMS your name to 32823, and we will call you back and sign you up as a friend of the Institute. Thank you very much for listening, and have a wonderful week. We'll catch you on Wednesday.